So the Truth and Reconciliation Commission just came through Halifax. Perhaps you want to first talk about your experience with that?
Well, I was there from the beginning and was asked to do an opening for the First Nations, Inuit and Métis, and I was asked to do it for the Métis, my dad's Cree, my mom's Mi'kmaq, and I participated in some of the circles and listened to a lot of the statements. So that's sort of, and met a lot of people from everywhere, so I had a pretty good sense not only of what was going to happen, but what the intention of the commissioners were themselves. I was pretty impressed with that, and I did, of course, the proof will be, the proof of the pudding will be in seeing what happens after that. So that's kind of just roughly where I'm coming from right at this point.
Yeah.
So unless, yeah, do you have any particular questions on that?
Well, from a distinctly outsider's perspective, from someone who has not suffered in this particular way, I'm just wondering, there can be truth, but reconciliation in terms of coming back to an equal footing, if not more so, how does that get accomplished by speaking truth?
Well, to start with, you'd have to have a definition of what was true. You asked some of the people, the effects of colonialism, some of the people in our own leadership and other places, what the truth is, they'd have a different definition than I might have. But in order to have reconciliation, you have to speak the truth. So some of that truth, I think, is missing and was missing from the commission thing here, because I've yet to hear some agencies, some church bodies that come right out and acknowledge their role in this. Some did in a very good way and are talking about how they're going to try to make make a commitment to Indigenous rights and undo that history. And others have yet to get to the point where they're even acknowledging their responsibility, or in the worst case scenario, their responsibility where people in power are the ones who did it and are still there, and in fact transferred some of the abusers in that one instance to other institutions and in other countries to carry on, and have yet to be held to account, except for a small minority, for what took place in those schools and those institutions. And I think, to use the South African thing, at least in South Africa, there had to be an accountability before there could be a reconciliation. And I think there's gaps in that accountability right now. That's where I think one of the problems is. And that's not vengeance, that's justice. And I think as well that, as Murray Sinclair said and the others said on the commission, and I believe them, they're going to want to see what happens from this point on as to whether or not the needs of the Indigenous community are going to be addressed. And I think he sincerely believes that, and will put that in the recommendation, and then it will be up to us at the grassroots level to make sure that happens. Same with the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. It's up to us to push this government to act on those things, whatever the limitations might be of that document. It's not a question of what's on paper, it's a question of what we do to change the world we live in, and that's what has to happen.
Would you have set this commission up any differently if you were in charge?
I would have added more of the accountability element, just in order to give people I hate that word closure, but to give people some sense that what they were going through, the pain, the suffering, the bringing that nastiness out, as all of us did, that there will be something come out of it. And without the accountability of the people who did some of that, I don't see how, people speak about forgiveness in a very, if I don't mean to be nasty, in a Christian way. Well, forgiveness can happen, you can do that on your own, but to me, I really believe that if you acknowledge what happened to me or others, then I'd be prepared to consider that. But if you haven't even acknowledged it, I'm not prepared to do that. I'm not prepared to be forgiving for some of those people. They're still out there. It's still, there's still, you know, the hurt is still there and they haven't addressed it. And I'm not willing to forgive that. I want to see that change. That's what I would have recommended in the best language possible, to say that true reconciliation means that there will be accountability and a balancing to bring things back into harmony. You don't bring it into harmony if you let the people who are the cause of it get away with it. They didn't do that in South Africa. And then you look at Central and South America, for God's sake, where people that murdered, killed, tortured, were let go, you know? Anyway, that's kind of, I'm just giving you my personal feelings on that. I don't know who I speak for, but that's what I think.
One other thing I consider is that the community that was asked to come and speak the truth is still, if we look at social indicators, still not necessarily at all on equal footing with the community that it was supposed to speak truth to. How can we have reconciliation when situations within those communities are still very much unequal in terms of, you know, we were talking earlier about being represented by even social services, or to a greater degree, environmental or catastrophes like Boat Harbor.
Yeah.
How do those things fit into the general notion of reconciliation?
Well, there was no acknowledgement of any of that. Not only was there no acknowledgement, there was something that came up during it where someone presented tobacco to me to go and pray for the people in, forgive me for not remembering the pronunciation, but I think it's Chibougamauga on the James Bay, where a bunch of, I don't know what the heck they were, holy rollers, fundamentalists of some kind, Pentecostals. A lot of the people on the council, the band council, were of that particular faith, and then a lot of people in the community were. They were totally colonialized, and they called for throwing the traditional sweat lodge off the reserve, and they passed a motion, did it, and bulldozed down the sweat lodge. So, you know, that is a carryover of the imposition of Christian faith on the people who have a different way of seeing things. Like, a lot of our people are Christian. Nobody's taken that away. But the imposition of a religion is different than the acceptance of a religion as a matter of free choice.
Yeah.
I accept people will make choices. Like our own people here, the Mi'kmaq, are largely Catholic. I'm not. And I'm Mi'kmaq, right? But that should be a matter of choice.
We were talking earlier about the notion of genocide.
Yeah. And what does Duncan and the Prime Minister say? That it was not genocide. Well, pardon me, that really pissed me off when I saw it on TV, about as much as when he called it an aspirational document, not a foundational document, the UN Declaration. If you turn around and you have as a deliberate policy to impose your religion upon other people because you believe it to be right, and that you're going to drive the Indian out of the child, that is the classic universal legal definition of genocide. It, just because they didn't succeed doesn't mean it wasn't genocidal. I mean, the only thing short of that would be to give the Mounties the guns and bump off those kids. You know, and there were people in the West, when the Indian Wars were going on, spoke about Indian people as being gnats. And if you're going to kill the person, the Indian, then you got to get rid of the fleas, the gnats too. And they were talking to the children of Indian people. That policy around residential schools is just as genocidal. And given the right conditions, then there was nothing preventing that kind of follow-up. So I'm not exaggerating just because it didn't happen that it wasn't genocidal. It was genocidal, and I'll stand up and say that. And I think it's the legal definition of genocide. They didn't annihilate all the people in Yugoslavia. That was still genocide. And the Armenians. There are all kinds of people all right now in the Congo. There are peoples everywhere. And Guatemala. I lost a friend down there. And, you know, nobody can tell me that that wasn't a deliberate policy of genocide.
On a local level, what about the reverence for Cornwallis?
And they speak of that as altering history. Well, history is what it is, but we don't have to honor that history. So right now we're sitting here, and I got a phone call this morning about signing on to a petition the school, Cornwallis School, was asking, and I'm going to talk to everyone on our board to change that name, and as well to change the name of the street that runs right by the Friendship Center called Cornwallis. I think that that's not changing history, it's changing who we honor in that history. And do we want to honor people that do that? And even if we were guilty of things, well, to go ahead and have an open discussion about whatever that might have been. But we should not honor people that do that, no matter what the historical context. They don't deserve honor. They don't deserve a statue or a street or a school or anything else, or a church of all things. There's a black church called Cornwallis. Somebody got to talk to those folks.